alcohol, the universally acknowledged social lubricant. Alcohol can make people feel relaxed, improve their mood, reduce anxiety, and can basically turn a chill night out into a roaring celebration. Conversely, alcohol has been known to reduce inhibitions, affect impulse control, and it can also affect brain function, causing a person to misread a situation and overreact. When alcohol collides with anger, the consequences are often devastating, and lives can be destroyed forever. This is the story of Dr. James Ng'ang'a Mwiruri. This is True Crime Kenya. Nairobi City needs no introduction. With a population of just under 5.5 million, the city in the sun is quite a youthful city, and the median age of the average Nairobian is 23 years old. Driving through the city, the billboards speak to the city's age demographic. There's always a concert, a new club open, or a fizzy drink to try. My favorite thing about Nairobi is that this city is alive. Nairobi has a pulse and energy that is difficult to describe, a unique and beautiful chaos with the capacity to energize or completely overwhelm you. Nairobi's nightlife is electric and is a big part of social life here. Venues range from casual outdoor barbecue pubs or nyamachoma pubs to exclusive champagne bars and nightclubs bursting with African beats. For Nairobians, clubbing is basically a rite of passage, a rite that never quite passes because most Nairobians don't outgrow it altogether. There's no need to. Unlike other parts of the world, there is room for people of all ages on the dance floor. And one thing's for sure, you are guaranteed to have a good time. On 23rd January 2009, 28-year-old Dickson Mwangi Munene, a police inspector with the Kilimani Police Division, drove to his friend's house on Elgeyo Marakwet Road in Kilimani, Nairobi. It was Friday. Dickson was off duty, and his friend, 25-year-old Alexander Chepkonga, known as Alex, had invited him and a few friends to his apartment for drinks. Dickson parked his car, got into the house, and joined the group, which included their mutual friends Mark Sagini and Melvin Gitau. They chatted amongst themselves for a while, music blasting in the background. Drinks flowed freely as they caught up on their individual activities that week and discussed their plans for the weekend ahead. A few hours later, the drinks had run out and the friends decided to go out. It was past midnight, but there were plenty of places still open. They decided to go to Florida 2000, fondly known as F2. A popular nightclub at the time, F2 was located on Moy Avenue in the Nairobi CBD. They went in two cars. Dickson drove alone in his car, while Alex and the rest of the group drove in another. On the other side of town, 29-year-old James Mwiruri was also well and truly in the midst of his own Friday night festivities. James was a summer bunny. For those of you who are not familiar, a summer bunny is a Kenyan who either lives or studies abroad and comes home to Kenya most commonly in the summer months to visit family and obviously to have a good time. James, the summer bunny, was back home in Kenya on holiday from the UK after defending his PhD thesis in international law at the University of Sheffield in South Yorkshire, UK. He had well and truly earned this trip home, and he was enjoying every bit of it. On this night, he was out at an area of Westlands known as Electric Avenue due to the high concentration of clubs in the area. James was out with his brother John Moiruri, and they decided to party at Crooked Q Bar, a cozy bar known for its cheap drinks, pool tables, and great music. It was also popular because it closed extremely late and was frequently the go-to final destination after a big night of partying. Back at F2, Dixon, Alex, and the rest of their group were having a great time. They had more drinks until about 4 a.m. when someone in the group suggested that they check out another drinking joint called Mobile in Westlands. Dixon got into his car with a woman he had met, and the other friends got back into Mark Sagini's car. They drove to Westlands, but Mobile was closed, so they ended up at Crooked Q. On arrival at Crooked Q, Dixon decided to stay in the car outside the club with the woman he had met. Alex and the other guys went through the security checkpoint and entered Crooked Q, which was completely packed and buzzing with activity. Inside the club, Alex Chipkonga, Mark Sagini, and Melvin Gitau found space at the center of the bar, where they were joined by another friend known as Ken. It was now past 5 a.m., but the bar was still open, so they ordered more drinks. By this time, all of them were significantly intoxicated, but by all accounts, happily and peacefully enjoying the atmosphere. On the other side of the bar, James had also had a lot to drink. He was eager to play a game of pool for a beer, but none of the people around him were interested. Elizabeth Wanjiko, a waitress working at Crooked Q that night, later stated that she had witnessed a conversation between James and a man named Tish, where Tish had declined James' offer to play for a bet. James, irritated that Tish would not rise to his challenge, allegedly insulted Tish by calling him Ngoi, which is the Kikuyu word for a dog. He told Tish that he was too poor to afford a beer. Tish responded that the only expensive item on James' outfit were his shoes. After a few more words, James wandered away from Tish and made his way over to the side of the bar where Alex and his friends were sitting. I must emphasize that these two groups of friends had never met before. And sadly, they would all live to regret ever crossing paths at all. It was about 5:45 a.m. at Crooked Q Bar, Westlands. By this time, all the main characters in this story were sufficiently and significantly affected by alcohol, so numerous versions of this story emerged later. True Crime Kenya has chosen the version found in the court documents. James Moiruri walked directly to Mark Sagini, tapped him on the chest and asked, "Are you gay?" James may have believed that Sagini had not heard his question because it is alleged that James tapped him on the chest a second time and asked louder,
"Are you gay?"
Irritated and infuriated, Sagini later stated, quote, "I got so offended because I did not know him. I asked why he was insulting me," end quote. Sagini then stood up to confront James. At that point, reports state that Alex also stood up to defend Sagini, while James' friend Jadida joined the fray, trying to pull James away from the group. Punches were thrown by both friend groups, and after a few heated seconds, a number of Crooked Q's bouncers noticed the conflict and stepped in to separate the two groups. One of the bouncers grabbed Alex and dragged him downstairs to the ground floor entrance, while the other bouncers held Sagini and James at the bar, trying to find out what had happened, who was at fault, and strongly warning them to calm down or get kicked out. A few minutes went by, and after speaking to his brother John and friend Jadida, James agreed to go home. The bouncers released him and his group of friends, and they walked out of the club. His brother John, who was either more sober than everyone else or had sobered up due to the commotion, immediately rushed to the parking lot to get the car, while his brother slowly made his way down the stairs. Meanwhile, the bouncers downstairs had also released Alex, who was standing at the front entrance, considering whether he should go home. It was reported that as soon as James stepped outside the club and saw Alex, who was facing away from him, he walked towards him and punched him in the head or neck. Alex, who had not noticed James approach him, fell to the ground. James then allegedly continued to kick and stomp Alex while he lay on the ground, possibly startled and caught off guard by the sudden attack. On noticing the commotion, Dixon, who had been sitting in his car outside Crooked Q, got out of the vehicle to check what was going on. He later stated that his intention, in his role as a police officer, was to place James under arrest for assault. Dixon missed this opportunity when James' brother suddenly drove up to the curb and yelled at James to get in the car. The two brothers and their friend Jadida sped off in their car into the night. After witnessing the assault on his friend, Dixon ran back to his vehicle and sped after James and John. Meanwhile, Sagini had made his way outside, and he and Alex got into the Mercedes and followed Dixon's car. Dixon caught up with the brothers at a roundabout near Sarit Center, overtook their vehicle, and made a sudden stop in front of them, essentially blocking them from driving further down the road. All parties got out of their vehicles and started an argument. Dixon took his police-issued handcuffs out of his vehicle and threw them at James, instructing him to handcuff himself. James refused, demanding to know what he had done and asking Dixon who he was. At this point, Alex and Sagini had caught up with the two vehicles and parked behind James' car. This meant that James and John's vehicle was now sandwiched between two cars and they were unable to drive off. Eyewitnesses at the scene including a flower vendor and other motorists, later alleged that, in the midst of the commotion, they heard Alex shout, quote, "Shoot him," end quote. And that without warning, Dixon pulled out his police-issued gun and shot James 2 or 3 times. On hearing the deafening sound of gunfire, Alex, Sagini, and Dixon drove away from the scene in different directions. A good Samaritan at the scene, Eliud Mwangi, rushed James to MP Shah Hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. A post-mortem examination found that James had died of multiple organ injuries caused by gunshot wounds. Dixon completely denied the eyewitness version of events and stated that after he saw James punch and kick Alex, which is a cognizable offense, he, as a police officer, was under obligation to take action. He admitted that he had got into his car and followed James' vehicle with the aim of arresting him. He also confirmed that he had caught up with James and John's vehicle in a traffic jam near Sarit Center and parked on the side of the road in front of their car, but denied that his intention was to block their way. Dixon confirmed that he threw the handcuffs at James and asked him to cuff himself, then stated that while he was making attempts to arrest him, James had grabbed the pistol from his waist and they wrestled for control of the weapon for a number of seconds. During the struggle, he claimed that James somehow squeezed the trigger and accidentally shot himself. Dixon said that on hearing the gunshots, he had panicked, and to avoid being lynched by other motorists and witnesses who had gathered around the scene, he drove off. While driving, Dixon allegedly made several phone calls to senior officers to report his version of events, then drove to Buruburu Police Station, which was closer to his home, where he reported the incident and surrendered his gun. After James was confirmed to have passed away in hospital, Dixon Munene, Mark Sagini, and Alex Chepkonga were all arrested. Mark Sagini was questioned and released without charge. But Dixon and Alex were charged with murder. James' family was absolutely devastated and furious on receiving the news of the death of their son. Citizen TV interviewed James' father 3 days after his son's murder.
They started hurling some abusive words to my son. He didn't know who they were, but he knew one of them. As they come out, escorted by the boxer, they find the same people waiting for them. So then there's another fracas, and then finally my son and his brother get a chance to drive off. Then this man, who we now know he's a police inspector, I'll tell you about him in the due course, he shoots my son through the heart, through the shoulders, and then as my son is lying on the ground, he shoots him another bullet through the mouth, through the head, and then he disappears, he gets in the Mercedes car, then he runs away. And he reports that he has shot a bank robber in Westlands. A bank robber he knows that he's a bank robber. He has shot him in Westlands. And he's also a Mungiki man.
Dr. James Nganga Kariuki Moiruri, was born on the 3rd of October, 1979, at Mata Hospital, Nairobi. James' father is former Gatundu North MP and former Assistant Minister Patrick Moiruri, who ironically had trained and worked as a police officer early in his career. James successfully completed his primary and secondary education in Nairobi, after which he was accepted into the University of Kent at Canterbury in the United Kingdom to pursue an undergraduate degree in law. He graduated from the University of Kent in 2004 with a Bachelor of Laws degree, achieving upper second class honours. Later that year, he was accepted to the prestigious Law School at Queen Mary's at the University of London, where he was awarded a master's degree with distinction in the area of international public law. He was also awarded the very prestigious Draper's Company Prize of Academic Excellence. Following his excellent performance in his master's degree, James was awarded a full scholarship for 3 years to pursue a doctorate degree at the University of Sheffield, where he was also engaged as a tutor for undergraduate international law students. He completed his PhD in just under 3 years and had just defended his thesis when he traveled to Kenya on holiday and met his sudden death. James' family described him as a loving and obedient son who was kind, friendly, and considerate to his family members and friends. Dixon and Alex's arrests marked the beginning of a long, bitter, and very expensive court battle. The two friends engaged their own individual lawyers, opting for the very best, brightest, and most expensive criminal lawyers in Kenya. Dixon hired senior counsel Kioko Kilukumi, later opting for the services of another top criminal defense lawyer, Cliff Ombeta, while Alex engaged senior counsel Philip Murgor. The trial was lengthy and included the testimony of numerous witnesses, including patrons who were at the Crooked Q that night and had witnessed the conflict, waiters and bouncers at the club, members of the public who had been caught up in traffic on the scene, pathologists, police officers, and friends of Dixon, Alex, and James. The court had the very difficult task of assessing all the witness statements, taking into consideration that many of them had witnessed the events of that night while under the influence of significant amounts of alcohol. Finally, on October 5, 2011, Justice Mohamed Warsame found that the prosecution had proved the murder case beyond a reasonable doubt. His finding was based on his view that it was unnecessary for Dixon to have followed James, claiming that he intended to arrest him when he had only committed what, in hindsight, was a minor offense. Justice Warsame was of the view that Alex and Dixon had a common intention to execute an unlawful purpose when they followed James' vehicle. He also questioned why Dixon had used his police-issued firearm in circumstances where James was unarmed. Justice Warsame convicted both Dixon and Alex of murder and sentenced them to death.
After spending 2 years in remand, police officer Dixon Munene and Alex Chepkonga were arraigned in court Wednesday for the judgment in the case where they are accused of murdering James Nganga, son of former Assistant Minister Patrick Mururi. The two were said to have been involved in a scuffle which started at Crooked Q Club in Westlands, Nairobi, that resulted in the death of Dr. James Ng'ang'a Moirori.
The two accused persons are guilty of murder of the deceased as charged.
Wednesday saw High Court Judge Mohammed Warsame find the two guilty of murder under Section 203 of the Penal Code.
The court sentence elicited mixed reactions, with James' family expressing their relief that justice had been served.
I am happy that justice has been done, because my son's death has changed everything in me and my family.
Legal counsel for both Alex and Dixon strongly disagreed with the verdict and sentence.
On the 5th of October, he convicted our client without any evidence, without any credible evidence. And today, he has sentenced our client Alex Chepkonga to death when the death sentence has been outlawed in Kenya.
Dixon and Alex immediately filed an appeal. Dixon's appeal raised four main issues. One, he stated that the judge had failed to scrutinize the witness statements, many of which, he said, had significantly changed since they were originally taken on the night of the shooting. Two, the pathologist's statement regarding the number of shots fired had been factually inaccurate. Three, the gun had never been dusted for fingerprints, which would have proved Dixon's theory that James had accidentally shot himself. And four, Dixon affirmed the claim that he was only attempting to make a lawful arrest, which had gone terribly wrong, and that a charge of manslaughter should have been considered. Alex's appeal claimed only one main ground, that, like Sagini, he had only been a witness to the events of that night and had not in any way influenced Dixon to shoot James. Ultimately, the court's decision came down to the fact that police officers, having undergone a significant amount of training, know better than anyone else that guns are dangerous weapons. The court submitted that police officers are trained to sparingly use guns in the course of duty only when it is absolutely necessary. In this case, it was not necessary for Dixon to shoot James for any reason. Additionally, the appeal judges found that the number of shots fired and the fact that Dixon should have known better than shooting James in the stomach rather than in another part of the body would result in a fatal injury. On February 28, 2014, the Court of Appeal decided that Dixon had intentionally or recklessly shot James, knowing that would cause him grievous harm or kill him. They affirmed the original decision and found Dixon guilty of murder. The Court of Appeal, however, quashed Alex's conviction and set aside the death sentence imposed upon him. The court further directed that Alex be set free. At the time of release, Alex had served 5 years in prison. The ruling sparked more mixed reactions, and James' family was enraged that Alex would walk free.
The appeals court has ruled and has acquitted the second appellant, that is Chepkonga. That is the kind of justice in our courts. But in ourselves, we ask one question.
Chepkonga is one who facilitated. And if it were not for him, my son would be alive today. He is the one who drove Sagini's car. The Mercedes car belongs to Sagini. They blocked my son's car. So jointly they killed my son. It would not have been possible for Munene if it were not for the assistance of Chepkonga for the crime and the murder to have occurred. But this is the kind of justice everybody is complaining about. When people are jointly charged for committing the same offense, especially in a murder case, and then one who is acquitted, when all evidence is very, very, very clear that it is him who followed and blocked my son's car, Mr. Munene from behind, the scuffle and then the shooting. This is the kind of justice we are talking about. Then our judiciary cannot be trusted anymore.
Alex Chepkonga has done his best to move on with his life quietly and make the most of his freedom. Dickson Munene has been at Kamiti Maximum Prison for 16 years. During that time, Munene has completed his Bachelor of Law degree online with the University of London. He has also attained a master's degree in entrepreneurship, become a certified information communication technologist, and is pursuing his doctorate degree in entrepreneurship online. Dickson has kept himself extremely busy in prison and has also written a book titled Justice to the End, which talks about his life story and provides his version of what happened on the night of James' murder. A few years after the appeal court verdict, James' father, Patrick Moiruri, filed a civil suit against the Kenya police for the losses they had suffered as a result of their son's death. In June 2018, the High Court awarded the family a total of 15,857,000 shillings for pain and suffering, loss of expectation of life, loss of dependency, and other damages. In 2020, James' father appealed this decision, arguing that his son, who was at the time pursuing a PhD at Sheffield University in the UK, had potential to earn more than 15 million shillings over his lifetime. The Court of Appeal ruled that at the time of his death, James was not employed, therefore his earnings could not be proved with accuracy. The court upheld the previous amount of damages awarded. James' family and friends have traveled a long road to closure, if closure exists. There are just so many what-ifs left unanswered. What if everyone in this story had not drank that night? Would James have approached Sagini? Would Sagini have ignored him? Would Dickson have driven after them? Would any of this have happened? I guess we will never know. James' family chose to honor him by establishing the Dr. James Moiruri Foundation, an organization aimed at promoting youth education, community empowerment and entrepreneurship, environment preservation, among other causes that James was passionate about. If you would like to learn more about James Moiruri or to support the work of the foundation, please go to www.drjamesmoirurifoundation.org for more information. True Crime Kenya is produced by Picture Media. Research, writing, and editing by DM Noor. Narrated by DM Noor. Theme song by Just a Band. Thank you for listening. Stay safe.
Dunia ina mambo, dunia ina mambo, dunia ina mambo bana.